Lip smacking good. Hi, everybody out there. Welcome to another episode of Lip Smacking Good. Well, the motto of this show is, if your lips ain't smacking, they ain't good. I have a very, very, very special, awesome guest. This is Goody. I've spoken with her before, y'all. Y'all are in for a treat. We're going to talk about a lot of different stuff. She's very educated, smart, intelligent woman, and this should be a fun ride, guys. So I'm going to go ahead and let Goody introduce herself. Say hi to everybody, Goody.
Hello. Hello, hello. I'm doing too many things at once. So I'm saying hi to everybody. My name is Goody Howard. I'm sex educator, intimacy consultant, and HIV activist, and I'm so glad you had me on today so we can get some things talked about. So I love that LSG, that lip smacking good. I love that.
Yes, love honey. That's my motto, because when I was trying to think of a name for the show, I think people better realize I really like food. Like food is not a game to me. It's not to be taken lightly. And I think some people don't understand the passion and the fire in my heart. Like I light up talking about food. Like people talk about their kids. You know, people talking about their kids. You see that spark in their eye. That's me about some food, right? That's me about that food. It's fun, especially something good that I want to share with you and I want you to know about it. You see that twinkle in my eye? You know that it's real. My voice get all excited.
You just light up.
Right. And when I eat, because, you know, I'm a country girl down south, so when I eat, I smack my lips when I eat. And I know for some people, that's their pet peeve. They go, girl, don't be smacking your lips. But if it's good, I can't help myself. And if it's real good, I smack. The better it is, the harder the smack's going to be. That's when you know I am really eating over there. And then don't let me be something what I have to, because I love to eat with my hands. So I drive my husband nuts. I eat sushi with my hands. I know you're supposed to eat chopsticks. I eat Jell-O with my hands. I know you're supposed to eat a fork. I drive him nuts. Cause
you
for some
Jell-O
reason,
with your hand? How do you eat Jell-O with your hands?
I just like the texture of, I drive my husband nuts. I take the Jell-O and I shake it. Cause I like to see it wiggle. I'm weird like that. I like to see it wiggle and jiggle. I drive him absolutely nuts. And so that's why I say it's lip smacking good, because I smack my lips and actually I lick my fingers too. So I should have called it finger licking good. For all, that's what I could have been named that. I wouldn't have cared. If it's good, that's what I'm doing. I'm smacking my lips. I'm licking my fingers. I'm humming. I'm bobbing and weaving. You know, we get the restaurant. I'm over there dancing because
we can't take you nowhere.
No, you really, really, really can't. Like if it's a special location, you gotta be like, you know what, Karen, my boss here, you know, I got some sophisticated friends. Like, you gotta like warn me. So I could put on my best behavior. But if it's like me and some friends and we kicking it and you bougie, I'm not the one you want to go out to eat with. I'm just not, because like, I want to enjoy my food. I want to sit there. I want to pat my belly. I want to joke. I want to laugh. I want to drink. You know what I'm saying? Because to me, when it comes to food, you need to be able to enjoy it. If you are that uptight and so sophisticated that you can't enjoy no meal, what is wrong with you?
That's true. I agree. Although I will say this, table manners have ended relationships for me. I have gone out and left men sitting at the restaurant table because their table manners were so atrocious.
What did they do?
Like talking with their mouth full of food, you know, like just, I couldn't even eat my food. I was so just, I couldn't. It was like a train wreck. I couldn't look away, and I just had to leave. Like, I couldn't. He was like, oh, baby girl, you can eat in front of me like pumpkin. I'm full figured. We know I eat. This is not a, no, it's you. I can't eat because of you. So, no, that I have a homegirl I won't go out to eat with.
Oh, Lord. You have
one. You need to eat before you come, because.
She on the do not eat list.
Ma'am, she is on the do not eat list, so. I'm glad I know. See, I know now. So it won't catch me off guard. So we straight.
right. But see, that's just me. And my husband, he's used to it. So it's just me and just my personality, because I really, but you know, and I've been like this since I was a little girl, since I was an infant, because I never crawled as a child. So I scooted. I went from scooting to walking. And so to make me move when I was a child, because I wouldn't move, what they did was that my mom would put food like about 10 to 15 feet away from me on the ground as a child, and I couldn't crawl. So I would scoot backwards and scoot all the way around and scoot it all the way to the food till I got it. So that's how you know it's serious for me. She said, you never crawl. She said, you could never go forward. You couldn't figure out forward. So if I set the food over there, she said, you would scoot backwards and scoot your way all the way around backwards all the way to your food. So, and I'm not picky. I tell people, I'm not picky when it comes to food. If I don't like something, I tell people, if I don't like something, I've had it multiple ways. I've had it baked, fried, flambé, souffle, just so I know.
You know, you don't eat something and like, oh, you just didn't have it prepared correctly, and that may be true, so you give it another chance or whatever.
Right.
Okay, well, we're gonna see how you feel about this, Miss Karen, because there's gonna be some foods that you may love that you might have to not eat no more,
you know what, eat a little bit. Yeah, you know what, as you get older, I realizing that stuff like blood pressure, high cholesterol, like that stuff comes into effect because your body, you know, you don't bounce back the same like you used to. So some of the foods that I really love, I have to eat them in moderation, you know, but I still eat them. I just eat them in moderation and smaller, portions. Because like right now I am 165 pounds. And when I was in about the third or fourth grade, I weighed more than that. Like, I was a huge little girl. Like, because I really, really love food. And also, too, I think that some parents, especially, I'm not gonna say black parents, because right now it's just an American thing, but a lot of parents don't realize that that your weight on your child matters. Because I think what happened is that I was pushing 2, and my mother was pushing 3. And they was like, look, both of y'all gonna die if you don't change the way you eat. You know, because my mama, she was pure 100% country. You talking about down here in Waysboro, Liesville, off of 74. This is like down here in this area where, you know, she was used to growing up on a farm where, you know, they raise their own pigs, raise their own cows, you know.
Chuck their peas and everything. Right.
You know, used to take chickens and break their necks and chop their heads off and things like that. So that's how she used to eat. Everything had hog maw, pig feet, fat back, you know, that type of stuff in it. And because I wasn't a picky child, if she said it in front of me, she didn't have to, like all that stuff. Kids be like, mama cut my edges off. She didn't have to worry about that. I ate it whole. Mama, you know, I ate fish with the bones in it when I was like 6 and 7. Like, it was not a game for me. So, growing up, she had to change her, because I only ate what she gave me. So when she changed her eating habits, it made me change my eating habits. And the thing is, like, I like to eat so much, I ate healthy stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I eat stuff like liver and beets and a lot of food. A lot of people, yeah, I see your face. A lot of people like turn that nose going, no, I don't eat that bullshit. But I eat it and it don't bother me.
Beets are the only thing that grows that I won't eat.
Okay.
Everything else, like, you know, like plants, vegetables, fruits and vegetables and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Anything else that grows up the ground, I'm going to eat it. But you won't catch me with a beet.
Just say you won't catch me with a beet. I don't know why. Like I said, I like a lot of food. A lot of people turn their nose. Oh, like last night, we went to this Mexican restaurant, and I had a beef tongue.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook. Lengua is good.
It is. Yeah. It is.
I'm from Texas, so it's tongue everywhere else, but it's lengua in Texas, because we got the real Mexicans, you know, we don't...
yeah, you know, and that's probably what they call. I think that was the name they had it listed on the thing. And I had it in a taco, and I had it, you know, with rice and fried beans. And when I tell you, it was it tasted similar to beef, just a tidbit more grainier.
Yeah, I said the texture is different.
Right, but other than that, it just tasted like some really good marinated soft meat.
Now, when it comes to proteins, like, you know, living things on plates, I have a lot of shit I'm not gonna eat. There are a lot of things I'm not messing with. I don't do anything that ever had tentacles.
Okay.
I don't do mollusks.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of seafood. I love seafood, but if it was an octopus or a squid or anything with tentacles, I'm not eating it.
Okay.
If it was an oyster or a scallop, I'm not doing any of those.
Okay.
Anything else pretty much I'll eat as long as it doesn't look like it did when it was alive. Like crawfish and stuff, they look like they're going to crawl off your plate. But if it's already, you know, veined and all that stuff, it's out. If it looked like it did when it was alive, don't put it on my plate. Oh, so don't do that.
Do you eat fish then? It won't
be there.
Oh, so you eat fish then?
Oh, I love fish. I love fish. I don't like catfish unless it's fried because that's not seafood. That's river food. That's different. It tastes different.
It does.
You can't fry catfish. Catfish cannot be blackened or baked because it's a bottom feeder and you can taste everything that it ate when you don't fry the hell out of it.
Yeah, you about to sound like my mama, because my mama, when she eat fish, she can immediately tell if it's like a freshwater fish or a saltwater fish.
Right.
Because she was saying about the taste. Like, I just like seafood, but for her, she could tell the difference. But like I said, for me, like I say, and the thing, when I tell people I literally eat anything, honey, I ate tentacles. I ate, we went to a place where we ate crawfish for the first time, and the plate was staring back at us, and I was looking at the plate was looking at me.
I'm not doing it. I can't do it. I'm unable to can.
Well, we had such a good time.
No.
She said, I can't do it.
I have nightmares. No, I'm not able to.
But that's the thing. Like I tell people, I said, I'm just, I don't want to say weird and strange, but like I said, that's
adventurous with your palate.
Right.
And you're adventurous with your diet. And that's great. Because you need to be, you know, you shouldn't eat just the same things all the time. You should be able to, you know, venture out and try new things, you know, and because when you argue for your limitations, they're yours.
Yeah, that's true. And the thing about it, I think for me growing up, my mama, she was, you know, strictly into that fish, chicken, hot dogs, hamburgers. And if she couldn't pronounce it or didn't know what it was, she wouldn't eat it. Like that was her thing. If it was not already in her repertoire, she was like, nope. And as I got older, I realized there's so much more food out there, and food doesn't have to be burnt to death, and food doesn't have to be fried to death to taste good.
Salt is not seasoning.
No, salt is not seasoning. You know, salt will cause your blood pressure to go up. That's what salt will do. And mm-hmm. most food that most people eat does not need added salt. A lot of people don't understand that. Most things that you eat, when you prepare them, you can use other spices. Like, there's yep. so, I don't think people, it's so many different spices that you can substitute. So many fresh spices yep. and this. And even if you like, I can't do fresh, you can do dried if you just want to substitute yep. in and you don't feel like, you know, mess with the plants and the leaves and things like that. You
can throw some green peppers and some red peppers and some onions in something and not have to use salt. And you can season with other foods, like, you know, right. chicken broth or chicken, you know, there are different ways to do it. And when we do get into our conversation about sex and food and how those two things connect,
mm-hmm.
Listen, there are so many things like with salt and fried foods and things of that nature that typically we eat, especially in the South, that restrict and limit your sexual ability and the way you enjoy sex. And you don't even realize it until you stop eating those things and realize how different your body feels and how different your body responds to your sexual stimulus. It's an amazing thing.
So while we're on this topic, tell yes. us a little bit more about your job and what you do.
Okay, well, like I said, I'm an intimacy consultant, sex educator, and HIV activist. Intimacy consulting basically is I end up talking about relationships and sex. Intimacy is what happens when you're not having sex. It's what leads up to the sex. It's the dynamic. And sometimes intimacy is completely sexless. Like your best friend, you have a closeness, you have an intimacy, but you're not necessarily sleeping together.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So right.
Intimacy gets a bad rap as far as people always associating with romantic intimacy. There right. are differences. So I'm a romantic intimacy consultant. So I talk to couples and singles as well, about how they perceive and how they fit in and how they interpret relationships and sex. And we work on the person. I don't work on, you know, trying to get you to be a certain kind of way. I work on how you, I feel like, you know, mating and courting and things should be figuring out how other people fit into your life the way you're happiest. And so not, oh, you should be this way to get a man, or you should be this way to get a woman. We don't do that. We don't play those games. Sex education, I do a lot of, you know, sex, a lot of how sex relates to life. And I feel like how people don't understand how ingrained sex is into everything we do. And when your confidence, your sexual confidence is bigger and better, then your overall confidence is bigger and better. And it's a more genuine type of confidence. So I do a lot of sex education. I do the sex toy parties, co-ed toy parties, oral technique workshops, striptease classes, sexual responsibility, talking to teens and youth about safer sex and healthy dating. And a lot of that, and how just everything you do in your life kind of correlates and can be related back to your sex and how you perceive it. Because now I feel like we need to normalize the conversation of sex so that the stigma doesn't exist, so that we have more openness as far as like the STIs, the STDs, the unwanted pregnancies, the abortions, the body control, the birth control, respectability politics, and so many other things that carry into our society as a whole that has become this repressed, you know, this just repressed monster that just kind of suffocates everything. And then I do the HIV and AIDS activism, which again is about proactive and reactive outreach, testing drives, self-esteem building, confidence building, and things of that nature, so that you make better choices for yourself, so that you lower your risk reduction behaviors when it's time, you know, when it comes time to actually have sex, so that you lower your risks for actually contracting HIV. Then my mission statement is empowering through sexual exploration, education, and awareness. So the exploration is the toys, the education are the classes that I teach and the outreach that I do. And then the awareness is the HIV and AIDS awareness outreach.
Okay. You were saying that you interview married people and like single people and like far as couplings. Can you tell the difference between like when you interview a married couple and when you interview like singles?
The main difference, honestly, it depends on the couple. When I'm speaking with a married couple versus a long-term couple versus a single, depending on what the issue is that we're discussing at the time, because I counsel them. Okay. So depending on what the issue that we're discussing at the time, typically singles are more relationship minded than people in relationships. Hmm. They're more focused on how to be a better partner and what they want and what they need and things like that. And then when you get into a relationship, you know, what the singles are focused more on what their partner needs and how to be a better person so that they can, you know, attract this kind of person or whatever. And then with the relationships, it's more of I'm not getting what I need. I, me.
Okay.
That's the biggest line in the sand that I see. The communication is also very lax, but I don't know how it would be with a single, because a single doesn't have anybody to communicate but themselves.
That's true.
So, you know, but typically within a relationship construct, it usually is I, me kind of thing.
Do you, when you're talking and counseling people and doing like your class and things like that, do you share personal things about your life with them to let them know, hey, you know, you're not in this alone, or these are things that happen in my life, or these are things that I do personally?
There are instances where I do use personal experience either prior to me being married or that, you know, exists within my current, you know, with my marital situation, but I do have boundaries. So it won't be, you know, necessarily something that is a sexual type thing. I also reference other clients, you know, they're nameless, of course. I also reference other clients' stories and issues and how they overcame those things, or again, something from my life from before I got married. But I do have boundaries. And so I do absolutely personally reference, because I need to be able to correlate that and make sure that they understand that I know what they're dealing with and I can actually help them, you know, kind of circumvent what's going on. But in the same regard, I'm here as a facilitator. I'm here as a professional. So I do have to have those lines in the sand that don't cross my personal life, my professional life.
True. And you just recently, not too long ago, got married. What's the difference between, like, because like I said, you deal with a lot of sex and sexuality prior to getting married and after getting married?
Actually, it's so much better now.
Okay.
I have an amazing husband. And the reason I got married, like, when I was single, I was happily single. I wasn't anybody's wife. So I didn't see the point of getting married until I found someone or came across someone that was a perfect fit for my lifestyle the way it was.
Okay.
That fit in was, and that genuinely support what I do. I had partners previously that were cool with me doing parties, but as soon as it became a co-ed toy party, they had a problem. Or they were cool with me having a lot of female clients, but if I had a male client, there was a problem. Like, they were so insecure. And so my husband he has, you know, Get Goodies t-shirts. He has AskGoody.com t-shirts. He has a shirt that says, "My wife taught your girl that thing you like."
Ah.
Like, he's, when we do co-ed parties, he's at the door. Like, he knows the presentation inside and out. You know, when I'm vending at, like, Gay Pride or something, he's out there showing the boys the toys right with me. Like, he is amazingly supportive. So I actually enjoy it more so now than I did before, because I have more support. And I love being able to teach him things, you know, and then he goes out and people are, like, amazed at him and how awesome he is. So I really, really, it's much better now. I mean, it'll be 2 years. We've been married 2 years on New Year's Eve. And so it hasn't been that long at all. And we've only been together 3 years. We were together a year and a half when we got married. But he is such an amazing support for me. And since I've never really actually had that, this is awesome. Like, it's awesome.
When you were counseling couples, have you dealt with couples that were swingers?
Yes. Swingers, open marriage, desires for threesomes, all that. It really takes a special type of communication to have an open marriage, to have a swinger type relationship. And usually those couples they care more about their partner. The couples that are successful swingers, they are much more mindful of their partner and the respect levels and the feelings of their partner within the context of the third person, typically called a unicorn. They have a much higher respect level for the thoughts and feelings of their partner in regard to the unicorn.
Okay.
When we're doing couple swapping, it's a little bit different. But again, there's an openness and an honesty and a transparency within a successful open relationship.
Okay.
You know, because you have people that see it on TV and think they want to do it and they're not prepared for the consequences. Because once that person leaves, or once that couple leaves, you're now here to deal with the backlash. If your partner enjoys that other person more than they enjoy you, now how are you going to handle that? You know, are you going to take that personally? Are you going, you know, there are so many consequences and backlashes associated with bringing someone else into your bedroom. So successful open relationships are very communicative, very transparent, very honest, and just, you know, it's an amazing dynamic because you don't really see that very often. I've only met two successfully open relationships. Everyone else, they're doing it, but they're not doing it well. That's why they're talking to me. And I'm still pursuing my education as far as being a therapist and a sex therapist and a counselor. So when it gets to a point that I feel that maybe they need someone that's trained a little differently than I am, or that's completed their training, I absolutely refer them out, because I'd rather them, you know, reach out to someone that's trained, that I trust, so they know that they are still in a safe place, rather than me misguide them or mislead them.
Oh, when you talk to your clients and things, do you talk about things like orgies and like if they into gangbangs or anything like that? Or is that something that you don't venture off into? Because I know when you're in it, it's probably very open. So do y'all get into those type of conversations?
We absolutely have those types of conversations if that's something that the couple came in, you know, with on their agenda to speak about.
Okay.
And really, it's not, when we talk about those kinds of conversations, it's not necessarily the physical part, not necessarily the how to part. It's more about how to handle the feelings and emotions that come out after, or how to negotiate the boundaries before having something like that happen. So it's really more about like, okay, he says he wants to do a train, or she wants to do two men and a guy, and I'm not comfortable, or how can I make myself comfortable because I really want to make her happy, or you know what I'm saying? So we negotiate the emotional and the intimacy side of those things. We can go over the dynamics and how they actually happen, but more times than not, it's about the boundary negotiation and just the real life applications of what happens once this is done. But some fantasies should just remain fantasies.
For some people, I believe that's true. Some people, sometimes porn just needs to be it. Like, you just need to go watch it on porn, get it out your system and go, okay, that's cool, but it's not something that I want to do in real life. Because there's a lot of things that I, when it comes to porn, I'm all over the board with it, honestly. But there are some things I might enjoy on the screen that I go, I don't ever think I could go through that, or I don't think I would feel comfortable with that.
Well, I mean, even so, sometimes when you have a fantasy and you fulfill it, it was nothing, your imagination was way better than what the actual fantasy, you know, was. And now you've ruined it for yourself. That's because it was nowhere near as dope as what you thought it was going to be like. And then when it was just a fantasy, it was something that really got you going. But now that you have a real life point in time to attach it to, it's not as exotic, it's not as fulfilling, and it's not as exciting as it was.
Yeah, that's absolutely true too. And you also cover HIV. Like, do you talk to people that are HIV positive, or do you talk to people that are concerned that they might get AIDS?
Both, actually. I do proactive and reactive outreach. So the proactive outreach is talking to youth and young adults about healthy dating, safer sex, and self-esteem building, genuine self-esteem building. We talk about rooting your confidence in things other than what you look like, because your appearance can change. Someone can change your appearance for you. You can get in a fight and somebody cut your face up. You can get in a car wreck and, you know, be in a wheelchair. You can gain a whole lot of weight. You can lose a whole lot of weight. So because your appearance is not a static thing, your confidence needs to be based on something that no one can take from you, be it your intellect, your style, your charisma, your engaging ability, all those things. And what happens is, when you base your confidence in intangible parts of self, your confidence is, you love yourself differently. And therefore, you make decisions for yourself based on that. And so you don't necessarily engage in the high risk behaviors that are associated with contracting HIV. And there's such a big cross section of low self-esteem and low self-esteem behaviors and abusive relationships and things of that nature that cross over into the unprotected sex and intravenous drug use and things of that nature, the high risk behaviors that translate into HIV contraction. And so the Goody Project. And then with the Red Pump Project, we do a lot of testing drives and things of that nature, because you can't get treatment if you're not tested.
True.
We do a lot of awareness events. Like, I tell people all the time, if you know you have HIV and you're on top of your meds, there's only a 4% chance you can pass HIV to someone else.
Only 4%? Wow.
Only 4%. So somebody that doesn't know they're HIV positive is more dangerous as far as contracting and passing HIV than someone that does know and is getting treatment. So the key is to get tested so you can get diagnosed so you can get treatment.
True.
So a lot of what I was like the stigma reversal and things like that, because people don't want to get tested because they don't want to be positive. They don't want to be dirty. They don't want to have it, because all the HIV stuff you see now is like, don't get it. Don't get it. Protect your status. Don't get it. Okay, but what if you do get it? You know,
right.
Now people test positive and don't know what to do because all the propaganda is geared toward don't get it, don't get it, don't get it. People are like, oh, I'm not out there like that. I'm not at risk. Oh, pumpkin. It only takes one time to contract HIV because it only takes one time to get pregnant.
Right.
Same thing. So I work with the entire spectrum of no risk, high risk, positive, negative, not positive, everything. I work with it all.
What's the youngest person that you've ever consulted or been in your class, and what's the oldest?
The youngest person I've dealt with is 18 as far as the sex part, the sexual classes and things like that.
Okay.
The youngest is 18. The oldest is 82.
Okay.
Because that was an oral technique workshop, and the grandmother of the bride, it was a bridal oral technique workshop, and the grandmother of the bride was there, and she's 82. And so we had the class anyway. You know, we're not going to discriminate. I'm going to have sex till I die. So I don't want to think because she's 82, she's not having sex. That's how I want to go out, actually, is having sex. So I'm not going to discriminate against someone that's, you know, older. I don't do classes as far as sex ed, as far as the oral technique and the sex classes. For anyone 18, because at that point parental consent, where the toys and stuff are concerned. Now the sex ed type stuff, it's like, you know, high school kind of stuff, and it's commissioned by that principal or that superintendent. So it's not something that's going to be outside the realm of the existing curriculum. There will be no sex toys or anything like that. But once I have toys, nobody under 18.
Okay. And when you was saying about your classes, you were saying you have two different types of classes?
Yeah, I do oral technique workshops, and I do striptease classes. So, and then, of course, I do the toy parties. And those are really educational as well, so I guess I should kind of count those as classes. I do toy parties and then co-ed toy parties, which we go over the accessories, adult toys for men, women, and couples.
Okay.
Because men don't even know that there are so many toys for them. Couples, accessories, there are vibrators that can be worn while having sex. There are so many different things for that. And then the oral technique workshop is exactly what it sounds like. It's blowjob class. It takes the work out of a blowjob. We go over the anatomy of the mouth, hand, throat, penis, oral and manual manipulation of the penis, diet, hygiene, show-friendly positions, how to incorporate toys and edibles into your oral technique, gag reflex control, dental placement, eye contact, and overall showmanship, you know. and then the striptease class is more of a burlesque type class. It's not pole, although I do sell poles on my website. I think a pole is a crutch. I think you should be able to walk in and press play and start stripping. So what I do is I create a routine, and it's a $75 booking fee like every other thing I do. And then that covers, you know, it covers the person that booked me and five people. And after that, it's $10 per person. And I teach them routine, and we go over taking off a button down, taking off a shirt over the head, taking off bottoms, getting on and off the floor, chair work, floor work, general striptease. And it's like a little routine that I string together, and, you know, everybody learns, and it's pretty awesome. It's like a erotic aerobics.
Okay. And that makes sense. And it sound, and that right there sounds like that will actually be a whole lot of fun. And you were talking about sex toys with people, like while you're having sex as a couple. And
yes,
like I've never heard of I've heard of like cock rings, and like, you know, little egg vibrator, but nothing that you can actually physically, you know, like use doing the act. Like, what kind of toys would these be?
There's one that's called the butterfly, and it's a wearable accessory. And so basically the butterfly sits on the clit, and it has a waist strap, and a left leg strap and a right leg strap. And so it sits on top of the vulva. And so it vibrates, and it has a little remote, you know, that vibrates. And what happens is it sits on the vulva and the clit. So you can still have sex. Like he can hit it from the back and be, you know, missionary, can be whatever. You can have that on and still have sex, and your partner can feel the vibration through your pelvis. There's another vibrator that's actually a insert vibe. It's a U-shaped vibe called the Wee Vibe, and it's the first couple's vibrator. It's U-shaped, it's shaped like this, and then the L part goes in. This part is up against the clit, and then this part that's inside the vagina is flat, so you can actually still, it sits flat up against the G-spot, so you can actually still have penetrative sex. And it has a remote control, so you can change the speed, the type of vibration, where it's a pulse or whatever. And now the Wee Vibe 4 Plus has an app. And the app, you can control the app from anywhere in the country. And it's really pretty cool, but right now it's in beta testing, so it's really kind of glitchy. Wow. There are not a lot of good reviews about it right now.
Okay.
But it pairs to your phone, and it pairs to your partner's phone. So let's say you're here visiting me, and Rod is where he is. He could turn the app on, and you put the vibe on, and he can control the vibration from his phone. So it's really pretty cool. I mean, there are lots of different accessories for couples, like, you know, the remote control vibrating panty and stuff like that, that necessarily can't be worn while having sex together. But it's still something, you know, I always tell people when I have lots of women ask me about, you know, I don't really like performing oral sex, but he loves it. How can I make it more enjoyable for me? Well, something like that, a vibrating panty, the butterfly that stimulates. If you stimulate yourself while you're stimulating your partner, then you'll create a Pavlovian response to associating your enjoyment with his enjoyment, and then you'll enjoy giving head more.
That's true. That's true too. I have realized that, like, when you're being intimate, and also I think too that when it comes to sex and sexuality, a lot of women are not, women are taught not to be sexual beings. Like, you're really taught that your body is just to have sex with, and to pop out babies, and that sex is normally missionary from the back, you know.
Yeah, you may or may not enjoy it.
Right, but you may or may not orgasm. You know, if you don't, that's fine. Long as he got his, your sexual satisfaction does not matter.
And it's secondary.
Right, and I think for a lot of women, it turns them off. And a lot of women have sex that is painful and not comfortable because they aren't willing or don't want to tell the man that that's not comfortable. I don't like it this way. Or let's try something different. Or let's do.
That's how we think it's supposed to feel. Because, like, think about it like this. When you talk about puberty and stuff like that, you always hear about young men, you know, learning about masturbation and stuff like that. Or, you know, they talk about it, you know, when you talk about puberty. When you talk about puberty in young women, we're not taught about self-pleasure. We're not taught about how to masturbate and things of that nature. And so when you get to that point in life that you're suddenly having these urges and you don't know how to handle them, you don't know that sex is supposed to feel good because you didn't know how to handle it yourself when you started having those urges. So if you're having painful sex, if you're having uncomfortable sex, you don't know that that's not how it's supposed to feel.
True too. And also I think for a lot of women, they get to the point in their lives where, like I said, you talk that your body's dirty, your body's nasty. A lot of women are surprised how many women do not self-pleasure themselves. Because my thing is, how can I tell you how to sexually satisfy me when I cannot sexually satisfy myself?
Exactly.
And that's very, very hard. Like, you need to know.
We are not sought to be pleasured though. Like you said at first, we are not taught to, and men are not trained to please us either. Men are trained to just have the biggest dick on the block and, you know, and that's it. Like, you know, you slang wood or you beat it up or you, all these violent, you know, euphemisms for sex.
Right.
They're not trained to please us either. That's not ingrained in them to please your woman.
Right. But the funny part is that when it comes, especially for people that have straight sex or either any type of sex, but I'm just speaking for me for as far as straight sex, it's just one of those things is that if you put your partner's sexual pleasures before yours, male and female, you both will be more satisfied.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, people don't even ask their partner, how does it feel? Did you enjoy it? And as small as that may sound, they just, you know, fuck each other and be like, all right, you know, get off me or get out, you know, or go on in that shower, here's a rag and shit like that. When they don't really ask about the are you satisfied part or how did I do? Because I think a lot of times when it comes to sexuality, men and women both have egos. Men's egos are more fragile than women's. But women have egos too, you know, because, you know, they think they get the best head, you know, or, you know, sometimes they don't even know what they're doing half the time.
No. And then I teach oral technique workshop. Obviously I'm not a slouch at it. Okay. But the reason I teach it is because I will be with a partner. He's like, man, you used to teach some other bras how to do that. Like, and I'm like, man, going on with that, you know? And then I started offering little tips and tricks in my toy parties and they were like, man, I'd pay for that. Without the toys. And I was like, So I was kind of, led to teach OT workshops. And I tell people all the time, I'm not trying to teach you how to do anything. I'm trying to add to existing talent. Right. I've taught over 50 workshops for women's age 18 to 82. And every single person has learned at least one thing in my workshop. Every single person. And I make sure of that because I ask before I let you leave, did anybody not learn anything? And I keep going until somebody learns something. You know, but it's not about teaching you how to do it. And you have to understand the anatomy of what's going on. You have to understand how to check in on your partner without checking in on your partner and make sure they're enjoying what's happening.
Okay.
Because just because he came doesn't mean he enjoyed it. He could have been thinking about something else that he enjoyed more than what you're doing right now.
Ain't that
true? He
could have
been thinking about the last chick that sucked it the way he liked it. And that's what made him come. You don't know.
That's true too now. Yeah, because sometimes just because you've been intimate with somebody does not mean that their mind is with you. Or with you at that moment.
I mean, he like you.
Ain't that the truth? That's the truth.
Because that was, listen, like I said, before I retired, I didn't have to like you to sleep with you.
Ain't that the truth?
I was very much the conquistador. I was very much the conqueror in that way. And I would just be like, I wonder if I could hit that. And I could. And then I'd move on. I didn't have to like you to sleep with you. And you know, the main people that are out there like that, protect themselves. Firefighters wear helmets of protection.
Yes, they do.
You know, the people that don't think that they're out there like that are the ones that are not protecting themselves. And everybody I know with HIV has contracted from someone they loved and trusted. I don't know anybody that was out there like that, that contracted HIV.
Yeah, because you know, so you're prepared for all types of situations. Yeah, that makes a difference. I want to ask you a personal question. You can opt not to question or not, but have you ever done like swingers or anything like that, or you've never went out on that realm?
Personally, Personally, absolutely. Okay. When I was, like I said, before I retired, I explored a lot of things, and a lot of it honestly was a professional curiosity.
Okay.
It wasn't necessarily something that I felt like would be for me that I would actually, you know, like get into.
Okay.
But I did have a professional curiosity. I have never, done any swinging where I was the couple and we had a unicorn. I'm not that evolved. I am very possessive and I'm not even gonna play those games.
Okay.
But I've been the unicorn and
okay.
I'm okay with being a unicorn. I will not, however, share mine. I'm not that evolved, because if you react differently to her than you do to me, I have a problem. And I know that about myself. So I won't put myself in those types of situations.
Okay.
But as far as swingers clubs and, you know, partnering and things of that nature, and just be like being a unicorn and things like that, I've absolutely done those things.
Okay. Okay. So you've never been in an open relationship then?
Well, yeah, with other couples.
Oh, okay. Well, but you've never actually, so when you're in a relationship, you're in a relationship. And when you're not, that's the whole, you're just not.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm with you now. Okay. Okay.
Like when I'm dating more than one person. And I tell them all, look, I'm dating other people. Until we have a conversation about being exclusive, we're not.
Okay. So you very.
So me dating other people doesn't mean that I'm necessarily dating them all at the same time or sleeping with them all or anything like that. But as far as exclusivity, until we have an expectation of exclusivity, don't have one.
Okay. Yeah, because that cuts down a lot of confusion, a lot of mess, a lot of foolishness. For both
and you
parties.
Have a choice. At that point, I've given you a choice. Do you want to deal with me or not?
That's true, too. Up front and personal.
That's how real pimping goes. That's what real pimping looks like.
I don't blame you. And we was talking about before you covered food. And what are some foods that you should not use during sex?
Oh, wow. I would say that, like, actually, when you get to the sensory play, when you get to food play with sex, I would say don't use anything with refined sugar in it. No chocolates, no whipped creams, no any of that stuff. You don't want to use anything that has refined sugar in it, because if you get that transference, like if let's say you put chocolate syrup on your male partner and you lick all the chocolate syrup off and then you go straight to having sex, even if you use a condom, you haven't gotten all that chocolate syrup off just because you can't see it. Okay.
Yeah.
And yeast feeds on sugar. So if you have leftover saliva and chocolate around the penis or around on the scrotum or anything like that, and then you go straight from sucking to fucking, you have a very high percentage of transference, and you may not, your vaginal pH may not be able to handle that. Now, every woman is not that sensitive, but why would you risk finding out the hard way that you can't handle chocolate syrup in your vagina?
Right.
Whipped cream, chocolate syrup, all of those high sugar content type things are very dangerous for your vagina, because yeast feeds on sugar, and when the yeast overruns, you get vaginosis and vaginitis and all kinds of other things, and you'll be at the doctor trying to explain, because you were in the kitchen playing and you went to the fridge trying to find something. Don't do that. If you just to incorporate something into your sex, some sort of food into your sex play, I would suggest grapes. Because they have like a natural sugar to them.
Okay.
Any
particular kind or it doesn't matter?
Any kind of grape is fine.
Okay.
If you wanted to do something like grapefruiting, I don't know how many people out that are listening have seen that. Grapefruiting is when you actually cut a grapefruit open and slide it over the penis while performing oral sex. You slide the grapefruit up and down the shaft of the penis.
Mm-hmm.
Grapefruit transference is not going to necessarily bother you, because the vagina is acidic as well, so it's not going to be an issue of citric acid. It may burn your partner though.
Okay. Oh yeah.
Penis is basic. Penis is not acidic, so it may burn him. So you may want to watch out with that. If any kind of pulp or anything accidentally gets inside you, that's not a good thing if you leave it there. And then you have an issue of trying to douche to get everything out, and douching is not good for you. So it really just depends on how adventurous you're trying to be. But when it gets to adding flavors and things of that nature, I would say stick with the sex toys, the edibles, and like the powders and the creams and stuff that the sex toy people sell, you know, because those things are tested and FDA approved for in case they get inside you. You want to make sure that you stick with those things. You don't need to go in your kitchen looking for anything.
Open up your kitchen looking for some sex stuff. Man, you be messing yourself up going, ooh, I'm going to use this banana.
Right. Right. You can't. You can't just stick a banana in there. Cause then, like I said, if you let's say you want to use a banana, okay, well, you're going to have it with the peel on or the peel off. If you got the peel on, you got to put a condom over it because the banana, the ends of the banana will rip you up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you take the peel off, what if the banana gets stuck in there, then what? You got to put a condom on the banana either way. If you're going to stick food inside yourself, cucumbers, bananas, hot dogs, hot links, Earl Campbell's, eggplants.
Oh, Lord.
Whatever you decide, stick in there, remote controls, hairbrushes, whatever it is. If you're going to stick something into your vagina, you want to make sure you put a condom on it.
Okay.
That's as real as I can put that. Because you can stick anything in there.
Yeah, yes, you can. Yes, you can.
I mean, really, deodorant, whatever, soda cans, whatever you want to put in there. But make sure that there's a condom on it because you can't just stick anything in there unprotected and you mess around. It's a very sensitive area. And it's like a petri dish because it's warm, it's wet, it's tight. So you want to make sure it should be tight. So you want to make sure that, you know, you're not leaving any bacteria in there that can just grow and run rampant in your area. You don't want that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Then, you know, you go for your annual, they'll be like, oh, it's Coca-Cola in here. You be like, Coca-Cola.
Right, no, it looks like what used to be Coca-Cola in here. Now right. You have a whole nother secret recipe.
Right.
And, you know.
Did you not made up from scratch? No, thank you.
Right.
That's not cool at all. Oh my goodness. You got me thinking, while we're on the subject of vaginas, how mm-hmm. do you deal with women if they talk about like their squirters? Because you know, a lot of women happen to be ashamed of squirting or don't understand squirting or think they're peeing. How do you work mm-hmm. with women with that topic?
I love it because women, I love seeing the look on women's faces when they realize that they can squirt. Okay. Every woman with a God-given vagina can squirt. Now, if you went and bought one, you have a mangina, then it's not going to squirt for you.
Okay.
Okay. So if you were born a woman mm-hmm. and you're having sex that you enjoy, okay, that's also a disclaimer. It has to be sex that you're enjoying. That sensation that you have to pee, that's not pee. Okay. That is actually a G-spot orgasm and you just let it go. Now what happens is the G-spot is 2 inches in and up. And when you stimulate the G-spot, it gives you the G-spot orgasm and it's a female ejaculate. It comes out of the urethra where the urine comes out, but there's no urine in the G-spot orgasm.
Okay.
And it happens, I'll say stay hydrated because the more you stay hydrated, the more volume you have when you squirt. And you see people on the videos, they squirting across the room and stuff like that.
Right.
That's fine muscle control. That's real. That's not pee. It's super fine muscle control. Okay.
Okay.
So you can learn how to realize that sensation when you're having sex with your partner and squirt and press, you know, you push out and it squirts across the room. There are, G-shots, which are, Botox injections behind the G-spot. Well, actually, someone puts a syringe behind the G-spot. I don't know.
Oh.
I just report the news. It is a G-shot, and it's a Botox injection behind the G-spot that makes it sit out further so it's easier to hit, so you squirt more. There are G-spot implants that are implanted, like little silicone balls that are implanted behind the G-spot to make it sit out further so it's easier to hit. But there are toys designed to explore the vagina in a way that gets you, to help you realize that sensation so that when you do get with your partner, you know how to make him move to hit those spots, or it's something that he can use with you to help you train yourself how to squirt and recognize that sensation.
Wow. Does everything have an implant? Fake asses, fake titties, so everything got an implant nowadays.
Well, yeah, I mean, but the G-spot is an enhancement. What happens is it makes it sit out further in the vaginal canal so it's easier to hit.
Okay.
Okay, because the G-spot is smooth on the vaginal wall, okay? But when you get aroused, it starts to fill with fluid. And so that makes it stand out. It pushes into the vaginal wall, like into the canal. And so it protrudes from the wall into the canal. So when your partner is going in and out, or if he's putting pressure on the outside of the vagina and pressing up against it, that's what leads you to the G-spot orgasm. So if you have a G-shot or a G-spot implant, it's just something behind your G-spot to make it sit out further and make it easier to hit. YouTube is a hell of a drug because I've actually like seen it done. And I'm just like, oh, never. You're not coming anywhere near me.
She said never.
like these, you know, the epidural needle, that big ass, thick ass needle, the epidural size needle.
Yeah.
That's what you use to do it.
The one that's,
right.
Yeah, the one that stick you with in your back when you about to have babies. No.
Yeah. So how about you not gonna stick me in my hoo-ha? I need an epidural to get the Jesus.
No.
But yeah, no, some women are really just gangster like that, and that's what they want to do. But there are toys that are designed to help you figure out where your G-spot is and how to hit it. And that way, when you do have your partner with you, then you can kind of know how to move them to stimulate you in a way to get you to squirt. And the beautiful thing about the squirting is you can keep having sex. After you squirt, you can keep fucking. But when you have a regular orgasm, you're drained, you're spent, you're done. But a G-spot orgasm, it just gets everything wet again, so you can just keep going.
Okay, well then that makes sense, because I've seen those poems before and they just keep going. I'm like, I was like, okay, I guess this was hot in the streets.
Right.
And that makes sense. Oh, for women that, there you go. When we talk about food, foods makes a difference in how men and women taste. What are foods that you should eat to make yourself taste better?
Okay. Things that you need to, first of all, the biggest thing that you need to intake to make sure that you taste better is water. You want to make sure that you drink at least half your body weight ounces in water, because it changes the way your circulation is. It changes your saliva. It changes your bodily secretions, your bodily fluids. For men, the ejaculate won't be as thick and mucus-like.
Okay.
So that change, you know, texture changes taste as well.
Okay.
It won't be as concentrated.
Does it change the pre-cum?
It changes all of it. Okay. Anything that comes out of your body being hydrated changes it. Women, it changes, you know, water changes your clitoral erection, just like with fellas, water changes your penis erection. Because circulation is improved when you're hydrated, and you know, erections are blood flow.
Okay.
So when you're better hydrated, you have better clitoral erections, better penis erections. For women, you get wetter differently. Your wetness is different. You actually have a hydration reservoir ready to squirt if you get stimulated in that way. When you reach orgasm, you know, it's not like a squirt, but it's definitely a wetness that your partner can recognize. You taste differently because, again, you're more diluted. You're not this concentrated, you know, this concentrated fluid. And same with fellas, you taste differently because you don't have this concentrate. It's kind of like, you know, diluted a little bit. As far as foods, strawberries, mangoes, pineapple, citrus fruit. Those are the types of things that you want to eat fresh, or juice them and drink them, to help change the way your body chemistry tastes. Now, it's never going to be delicious, so just let that go. But what it will do is help it not be as bitter. It'll add a sweetness to it. It'll add, like I said, a difference in texture. It'll take away that bitterness, that twang, that saltiness. It'll just kind of balance it out to where it just, it's like maybe more saliva, as opposed to you already know when they came because your mouth just tastes horribly. It also changes the way your kisses taste, because it changes all of your bodily fluid chemistry. Okay. Mm. So your kisses will taste differently as well. Things that I say you should avoid, will be fried foods, fatty foods, red meats, beer, garlic. I love garlic, so I just really eat a lot of pineapple as well. Soda and alcohol are a big one to avoid. And there's one more that you need to avoid. So smoking. Yes. Okay. Smoking anything, people, not just cigarettes. Smoking weed, smoking crack, whatever it is you choose to smoke, heroin, whatever. Smoking has a calcifying effect on blood vessels. So when you calcify your blood vessels, they don't fill up with blood the way they should. That includes the blood vessels in your penis and clitoris, penis and vulva. So if those blood vessels get calcified, they won't fill up the way they should. So your penis may be smaller because it won't get filled up with the blood the way it could if you weren't smoking. It also affects the way you taste. All the poisons and nicotines and tars and chemicals and cigarettes absolutely affect the way you taste. And with this whole hookah thing happening right now,
yeah,
everybody's like, hookah, that's like 200 cigarettes, because there's no filter on a hookah.
Oh.
It's still tobacco. It may not be nicotine, but it's still tobacco.
Oh, okay.
So be mindful about all that stuff. But yeah, as far as making you taste sweeter, like I said, strawberries, oranges, green apples are really good for that. Pineapples, mangoes, avocado is a super fruit. It's great for that.
Okay.
Things that you eat will, that will help with your erection and your blood flow and your circulation, anything with antioxidants in it.
Okay.
Is great. So that's the blueberries and, you know, avocados, again, superfruit. you know, anything like that with the antioxidants will help with your circulation and your blood flow. Foods that are high in fat, high, like, even though steak and red meat is really good for protein, they're also high in fat. If it's like deep fried foods and stuff like that, all those fried foods constrict your blood vessels and it impedes circulation. So it has the opposite effect as far as, erection quality, bad clitoral and penis erection quality, blood flow, stamina, because even though you can get it up, if you can't keep it up, who cares?
Yeah,
so stamina is affected as well. So you just want to make sure that you're getting a lot of aerobic exercise and eating well because it affects your stamina and your erections.
So, like, so some of the advice you were just giving are advice that you give for men that have problems, because I've realized this, a lot of the things that happen to us sexually, and I think for men, because for men, they're taught the penis is the end-all, be-all type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So a mm-hmm. lot of their body tells them a lot quicker than it would tell a woman if something's wrong with you, through their penis. And,
yeah, for the most part, if they're paying attention. Because, right. Like, even with a woman, it'll, your vagina will tell you if something's going wrong. If you're sick, if you have a cold, if you have the flu, anything like that, your vagina changes as well. But you have to be that in tune with your body to notice the changes. True. Even, like, with menopause and things of that nature, your wetness changes. Your ability to wet changes. And if you notice those differences, then, yeah, you're going to know. As far as men and their health and their penises, your erection quality changes. Your ability to get erect changes.
The length?
You might... Huh?
The length of it changes.
Yeah, all of it. The quality of the erection. Okay. It may not be as hard as it usually is. It may not be as big as it normally is. It may not feel as good as it normally does because you don't have as much circulation down there. Circulation issues absolutely manifest in erections because that's a part of your body that you don't need to live. So if you're having circulation issues, your body is not going to take circulation from your heart and your lungs to give to your penis.
True.
So you don't need that. You're straight. You know what I'm saying? As far as like prostate cancer and things of that nature, mm-hmm. all those types of things manifest in your erection quality, the sexual experience quality. Even when you go in to pee, you'll notice that your urinary erection is different. If you have a throbbing in your scrotum when you're not doing anything, you just, you know, suddenly your balls are thumping. Why? You know, you just, it all those types of things absolutely manifest.
And going back to something we talked about before, how do you help women deal with getting over a lot of the hurdles mentally? Like maybe when it comes to satisfying oneself or squirting, like how do you help people get over those techniques? Because for a lot of people, they have these walls up and it's hard mm-hmm. to get them to get over the walls, to get them to actually enjoy their body sexually.
Well, the first thing I tell every person, is that if you're masturbating without lubricant, your life is incomplete. some women don't admit to using sex toys or have never used a sex toy, but at some point they have experienced some kind of self-pleasure, whether they admit it to you or not. And usually it'll be just they're using their natural wetness or they may be using some sort of lotion or whatever. Fellas are notorious for using lotion and Vaseline and things of that nature to masturbate with, which is ridiculous. Lotion is designed to be absorbed into the skin.
True.
Vaseline is designed to be absorbed into the skin. Anything you're using that's designed to be absorbed into the skin will be. And your penis is made out of skin. So, when you use lubricant, it's designed to create a barrier between your hand and your penis, or your hand and your clit. And therefore, you have a smoother ride.
Okay.
There are lubricants that are specifically designed for masturbation.
Oh.
Yes. Yes. It's one, my favorite is called Jack-Aid, and it's exactly what it sounds like, but it's a lot thinner, and it just goes on. It doesn't get sticky. I love it. I use it when I do my presentations. And so I use it like when I have a fake penis that I use and I put the cock rings on and the strokers and stuff, and I use Jack-Aid as the lubricant to show how they're supposed to be used because it doesn't get all sticky and nasty and gross. KY is not your friend. Do not buy that stuff. My favorite lubricant in general is called Moist, and it comes in all, it comes in oil-based, silicone-based, and water-based. It comes in flavored, warming, tingling. It comes in all those little variations that people seem to like.
Yeah, I like warming,
Yeah, I'm not a fan of warming because I'm hypersensual. I'm hypersensitive. So warming burns to me.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out where your limitations are with the different types of things that you try. But Moist lubricant brand is OBGYN approved.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a positive thing.
Yes. So I always suggest Moist to women, and Jack Aid to men. But Moist, fellas can use Moist as well. And I always say use a water-based lubricant because water-based lubricants don't stain your sheets, they don't stain your clothes, they don't tear up your toys, and they don't break condoms.
Mm, okay. And
lubricants break condoms and tear your toys up. Silicone lubricants, they don't, but they still stain your sheets.
Oh, and what would be the best type of condoms for people to use?
My favorite is the Lifestyle Skin. That's SKYN. I'm really trying to get them to sponsor me because they don't sponsor events, but they sponsor people.
Okay.
But I'm going to tell you, I love Lifestyle Skins because they are non-latex condoms. They are a polyisoprene condom, which means that they're not rubber. Latex dries you out. Latex will dry a woman out. Rubber dries you out. Polyisoprene is a man-made fiber. It's not latex. Therefore, it can use a different lubricant. So you have a smoother lubricant and it doesn't dry you out. If you notice that rubbery smell when you have condoms, mm-hmm. a lot of times fellas think that's us.
Oh, no, baby. We don't smell like rubber.
Right. So, but it's a stink kind of. And like I said, I'm hypersensual, so I'm sensitive to smells and things of that nature as well. So for me, for a long time, when I smell rubber, I don't even want to have sex anymore. But I love the Lifestyle Skin condom. They also come, they stretch differently because they're not made of latex, so you really don't need a Magnum skin condom, but they do make a large. They also come in a gold wrapper, so everybody's happy. Magnums are horrible. They have the highest rate of American-made condoms. They're made of latex. Once Trojan is done making their other brands, they're designed to be ill-fitting, and every man doesn't need one. If you cannot fit your erect penis into a toilet paper roll, then you might need a large condom. If you can fit your erect penis into a toilet paper roll, you don't need a large condom. Mm. But you can fit a regular latex condom over your head with very little effort. So no one needs a large condom, but it is about comfort and fit. So a Lifestyle Skin condom stretches differently, so nobody really ever needs a large. I had one partner that needed a large, but that's a whole nother story. Anyway, it's very rare.
Okay.
And everybody wants to be the exception to the rule, but you're really not. but I love them because they're not latex. So if you have a latex allergy or anything like that, it's already handled for you. Like I said, they don't dry you out. They use a different type of lubricant. And I've never broken a Lifestyle Skin condom. When I was using latex condoms, I used to break them all the time.
Right. Cause they're not good quality.
No. What happens is because when they start to dry you out, now you have a friction issue.
Oh.
No matter how wet you are, if the latex is drying you out, that's not something you can control.
That's true.
So that's why they tend to have a higher breakage rate, because the latex is working against your body. The lubricant is working against your body because you're limited in the lubricant you can use because it's a latex condom. Mm. Okay. So with a skin condom, you have the non-latex and the lubricant that's a little smoother as well. So you don't have the friction issue that leads to the breakage rate. I used to break condoms all the time. I have yet to break a Lifestyle Skin condom. Okay. And I still use them, because even though I'm married, we still use condoms.
I don't blame you. You don't want to have kids? I don't blame you.
Yeah, I'm not taking birth control. So we're not trying to get pregnant right now. So we're doing this against hormone control. Can't take, like I said, hypersensitive. That's a gift and a curse. Everything that touches me, I either enjoy or don't. But also, my hormonal changes, I'm very sensitive to. So, you know, birth control is hormones.
Yeah, it is.
And it makes me feel, first of all, I don't do anything at the same time every day, and you have to take birth control at the same time every day for it to be effective. Secondly, I feel those hormonal changes and I feel crazy. It's like PMS all month long.
Yeah, like I said, and I think when it comes to birth control, and men and women, but especially a lot of men, don't really understand that when it comes to birth control, You literally, there's so many side effects, blood clots, and all kinds of stuff that can happen because you're basically
calcifying your bones, everything else.
Right, because you're basically taking a natural balance and altering it with the drug.
Mm-hmm.
And that affects things. I know for a lot of women, they gain weight. A lot of women, they get bloated. A lot of women, they get headaches. A lot of women, they spot.
Well, because what happens is the hormones are tricking your body into thinking you're already pregnant. So that you don't ovulate. So that's what that is. So your body is like, oh, we're pregnant. So you going through all of the weight gain and all that other kind of stuff. It's because your body thinks you're pregnant.
Yeah, it ain't no joke. And like I said, for sometimes the shots work better, but they have their ups and downs.
I was on a shot for 10 years and it messes with your bone density.
Oh. So
it did mess with mine. My doctor said he would have never known I was on it for so long, looking at my bones. But you're supposed to take calcium supplements when you're on the depot shot because it messes with your bone density.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, which at least it increases osteoporosis.
That's exactly what osteoporosis is. It's bone density issues.
I'm sorry. I'm like, yeah,
you're right. That's exactly what happens. And I was on it for 10 years. And as soon as I got off, a month later, I got pregnant with my son.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
He just turned 11.
Oh.
And I ain't been on birth control since. I won't do it.
Oh, that's so precious. Do you cook, sweetie?
Every day.
Oh. What inspired you to cook?
Well, my mom doesn't cook, and I was raised on church's chicken and Chinese food. And she don't cook. And I feel like when I cook for my family, I'm nourishing them. I feel like I'm doing something good for them, and my love is being translated into feeding their bodies. And so I love it. I love entertaining, and so I love figuring out new ways to present things. I love when I make them something. Oh, dinner was really good today. Or, you know, I love that. And so I want to make sure that I do that for my family. And I love the fact that people are always surprised that I cook almost every day because I do so many other things. But I make time to cook for my family every day. If I don't cook, it's because I'm tired. We'll do something quick, or I even might find something quick. But I cook almost every day.
Do you prepare meals in advance?
Sometimes. I usually like, if I think about what I'm going to make, I'll pull the protein out of the freezer, the night before and put it in the sink. So then when I get up in the morning, I can season it and put it in the Ziploc bag. So it can be seasoning until I get ready to cook.
Okay.
And then I can bake it or grill it or whatever. So I do that kind of stuff. But as far as like meal prep, actually prepare, like cutting up the vegetables and mm-hmm. I don't do any of that. But I have a bazillion kitchen gadgets that do it for me.
That's what I'm talking about.
For the last minute, I love kitchen gadgets. And so I'm like, I'll go on Ross and just look for something. Because, you know, Ross has like the random as seen on TV kitchen gadgets station. And I'll go in there and just pick up stuff and just be so excited about it. So, I mean, I have lots of kitchen gadgets that, you know, chop, dice, julienne, all that cool stuff to the vegetables. And I steam the vegetables. I steam our vegetables for the most part. You know, but I mean, I don't do a whole lot of food prep. But the protein, you always have to do that. You have to prep that.
Where do you get your ideas for your meals? Is what you see on TV or how you feel for the day?
It depends. Like if I have a craving for something, I'm making what I want. Okay. But Facebook is really a gift and a curse because people like share recipes and stuff on Facebook.
Yeah, they do.
Pinterest. I saw a pepperoni pizza cake today.
Ooh.
Okay. First of all, I was like, it is the devil, but I'm going to make it.
Right.
Cause I'm going to make cream pizza cake. It's like you take the pizza, you take the pizza dough and you cut it into circles and you lay it like lasagna, like you layer it into a cake dish, like it's a round cake dish. You layer pizza sauce toppings, then, you know, it's crust, pizza sauce toppings, crust. So it looks like a layer cake when you're done and you cut it like cake and you just like serve it like a layer cake on a plate. I cannot wait to make supreme pizza cake. I can't wait, but I have to wait till we're entertaining because we're not gonna eat off that. That's not gonna heat up very well the next day. So I gotta make sure because we take our lunches and stuff too. Everybody takes their lunch, so I gotta make sure that we go. We going somewhere when I make this. because somebody's got to eat all this. Like Pinterest, I get emails from Pinterest. Like craft foods and family, this and family, this and such. I actually bought a Groupon for, it's a thing called e-meals. Ooh. And, they send me every Wednesday, I get an email for, with a week's worth of recipes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And there was a, at the beginning of the, you know, these challenges, these 52 week challenges. Mm-hmm. And so, I found one that was a new recipe every week for a year. Mm. And it sends you a new recipe. Like it sends you a couple of them so you can pick which one you want to make. Cause it may be something you ain't really trying to eat. So right. They give you a couple of options. So I always try to find, new ways to make the same stuff, you know, to prepare the same ingredients or whatever. I love figuring out new ways to present the food. Like I love fruit salad. So I just get like a cheese grater and I grate up green apples and nectarines and I cut strawberries up and I cut, grapes in half and I use the canned mandarin oranges and like I make fruit salad, but it's like, it looks like fruit slaw. Like it's so cool looking. And it's just the presentation is different and my family loves eating it like that. It's not this chunky fruit salad. It's like a slaw and you can eat with a fork. I take a regular green apple and grate it up. Okay. Just one large green apple and grate it up and put nutmeg and cinnamon on it. And eat it with a fork. And I feel like I've eaten a whole lot, but it's just one apple. But the presentation changed. And so, you know, because you have to eat it with a fork, you feel like you're eating more.
True. That's true too.
Just simple stuff like that. Simple stuff like that. I love coming up with new ways to nourish my family.
Ooh, what is the most unique thing you've ever eaten before?
Lion.
Ooh, how was it prepared?
It was pan seared and seasoned, I guess. We were in the, on Tenerife in the Canary Islands. Tenerife is the biggest Canary Island. And, I was actually 5 months pregnant and I saw lion on the menu and I was like, oh, I want this. And I'm thinking they just call it lion. Like it's not really actually lion. And so I ordered the lion and I get it. And it was a very, it has this texture of deer. Okay. Like it has a very, like a very roast beefy type of texture.
Okay.
But it's kind of grainy like the lengua as well. It's kind of like it's a little heavier. But it was really, really good. And then but I cried though. I mean, I was 5 months pregnant, but I cried because I realized it was really lion.
Oh, you eating Simba?
Yeah, and that made me sad because I love lions. It just really made me sad. And I was like, oh my God, I'm really eating. So I had to stop eating it, of course. So it was a lot less delicious in retrospect after I realized it was actually lion. Oh. But I would say lion and maybe rattlesnake. Or the like, the most exotic I've ever eaten. I'm in the country. So you say you in the country. I don't know where exactly you are, but I'm in Texas.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, I'm actually in like the city, because I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. My family and them, they out there in the country. They out in the boondocks. Like they always laugh at me because I tell them I don't like the country. I tell them, no, I like trees and vehicles. I don't like things to be 18 miles apart.
Lines, indoor plumbing.
Right. So I'm like, I ain't going to nobody's outhouse. So yeah. it is a difference. And you know, you said you was crying over eating lion. Maybe I don't have the compassion of the heart. Cause I'd have been like, he is delicious. Can I have a, like, I'm like, ooh, he tastes good. You know, I'm sorry. I dip him in some sauce and keep it trucking.
Well, I mean, it depends. But like, I mean, here in Texas, I live in Dallas, which is of course a metropolitan area, but I live in like Lancaster, which is like, if I drive 5 minutes one way, I'm in Dallas and then I'm in the city.
Okay.
So I'm like less than 15 minutes from downtown Dallas. Okay. But if I'm at a red light, there may or may not be a man on a horse next to me.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's an incorporated area, but you never know. My grandparents own a ranch in Wills Point, Texas. We were the first black family in Wills Point, Texas. Like, they have a house here, like they're educators. They have a home here in Dallas, but they have a ranch in Wills Point. We have a catfish tank. I had to shuck peas growing up and pick corn and all that other foolishness. You know,
right.
We have cows, beef cows. And so I had a pet cow and we ate her and I was upset about that. I didn't eat meat for 2 years.
That will mess me up. Now that part will mess me up. I got to name you. Okay. Cause I don't name her.
Her name's Misty.
She's
my cow. You know, so
if I got to name you, I might be hurt.
Yeah, I was upset. Girl, I was devastated. I didn't eat meat for 2 years. And so, I mean, but like, so I have a great blend of country and city, you know, but I now the country is not the country anymore. Like, they get the radio stations and stuff and everything there now too. But I mean, when I was growing up, we were shucking peas and riding tractors and baling hay and slopping hogs, and then I would go back to the city on, you know, during the week.
And it's a whole nother story.
And be at a drive through or wherever and have indoor electricity and everything else. So it just really, I thank God that I have such a diverse upbringing. But yeah, no, I've eaten a lot. I had rattlesnake jerky. I've had deer, turtle, raccoon, squirrel, things that you probably should actually eat. pigeon. I've had pigeon.
Oh my.
So,
how did pigeon taste?
Girl, it was very chalky.
I was about to say, like, it tastes like it tastes dirty.
Yes! That's exactly what it
because
tastes
because I just think of a pigeon, like not trying to find, like, the bird itself. Yeah.
It tastes like a flying rat, which is what they are.
Oh, yeah. Horrible. I don't think, that right there don't sound scrumptious. Do you go to any food festivals?
Oh, well, I love food festivals. We have here, a Taste of Dallas.
Okay.
And Taste of Dallas is like, you know, especially with the food truck revolution. Oh my God. We have Food Truck Palooza.
I think it started down there.
It probably did, but okay. The Food Truck Palooza, it'll be like the arena parking lot is full of food trucks and you just go and they have like the available, like the great stuff celebrations where you can sample everything. But the Taste of Dallas, they even have like an alcohol part now. And so they got the indoor and outdoor. You got dessert you got the dessert land. You have like the alcohol land, and then you have like all the food and all these different places. And Dallas is such a, especially since Katrina.
Okay.
The culinary landscape of Dallas has absolutely changed, for the better. And there's so many new tastes and sounds inside. Like, I went to college in Houston, and Houston ain't nothing but North Louisiana.
Okay.
You know, it's just, I mean, but that was before Katrina. It was, I mean, I had never heard Zydeco before I went to Houston. You know, I had never seen a crawfish boil or anything before I got to Houston. That was pre-Katrina.
Okay.
So we have that influence here in Dallas as well now. And then we have so many, people that come up from Houston, you know, Houston's a port city. People come into, we have so many colleges here.
Okay.
Like SMU and all that stuff. So we have colleges here that people, you know, their families come, and we have all these different diverse restaurants and just amazing. The culinary landscape here is very, very, it's much more diverse than what you would think, I guess, Dallas, Texas would be.
True.
But we are a big metropolitan area. Like, my husband's birthday was last Sunday, and we had a brunch at a Caribbean restaurant.
Mm.
And we had 36 people in that restaurant. We took that restaurant over. But I had ackee and saltfish. I had never had that before.
Ooh, how did that taste?
It was good. It was kind of salty, but it was good. Like, I had ackee and saltfish and rice and peas, and, you know, we had the salmon cakes, and we had all different kind of stuff. You know, it was a Jamaican spot, and it was awesome. So I really am proud of Dallas for kind of embracing culinary diversity.
Right.
I love food festivals and all kinds of stuff.
Right, because I think a lot of times people think down south, they automatically just, they don't think of diversity, but the South is a lot more diverse than people give it credit.
Yep, so we get soul food and barbecue, and that's it. But it's so much more than that.
What is your favorite thing to eat that you don't make?
Fried chicken.
Fried chicken. I'm keeping it simple.
Not fried chicken. I won't do it because the whole house smell like fried for like 2-3 days.
Drew, have you done oven fried? Have you ever tried that version?
I have, but it just tastes like shake and bake. I want grease. I want fried chicken. So, and they're messing, they're building a fried chicken place like walking distance from my house right now. Every time I pass it, I get so excited because another layer is complete. Like last time I drove by, they had the pipes and stuff. It was just the ground. They had dug the hole, but the pipes and stuff was coming out the ground. I drove by again this morning and they had the slab was laid. And my husband came home. He said they got the framework up. I said,
don't feel bad because we've never had Popeyes before, right? Because
what?
Popeyes is new to Charlotte.
Wow.
And so it was funny though because we actually rolled past the Popeye. We were so excited that when it first opened, we rolled around it several times and realized wasn't nobody in there but the employees. We were looking like, is y'all open up yet? it appeared out of nowhere. One day you rolled by there, it was nothing. Next day you rolled by there, it was a goddamn Popeyes. I was like, where the hell did this? I was like, I don't know if they're using Lego blocks to put them up, but it's up. That thing might fall down.
It came down the freeway. They just dropped it off.
they just put it down because I was looking like, where the hell did this Popeyes come from? And we was excited. So we got to try Popeyes. The first time we tried it, it wasn't good because everybody tore that damn Popeyes up. And it was like midnight. So they was, they was basically everything we asked for, they were sold out. Red beans and rice, man, we out of that. Lemonade, we out of that. So I think we went back. One more time, we're gonna go back again, cause I wanna give it a chance when it's like not jam, you know what I mean, not crowded, where you can actually get a taste of their food. So me and you on the same page when it comes to that, cause I been looking at the layer, especially if it's something I can't wait to see. I be like, yeah, they got the roof on, baby. Hey, they gonna put them shingles on next.
Yep. I can't wait. They cut them lights on. It's over. I'm walking over there. I'm right. Not even gonna drive.
Right. Don't let me walk. Don't let me walk past and see the drive through lights on. You know how they had the menu outside. The lights up.
Yep. I'm gonna just walk over because that way I can kind of burn off some of it. I walk over there and walk back.
I feel you.
I don't fry in my house. I don't fry fish. I don't fry chicken. I told my husband I want one of those fry daddy things that you can plug in outside, okay. So I can fry outside. But I'm not frying in my house. It smells like grease for 2 or 3 days. And again, hypersensuality, hypersensitive. I can't smell. Like, I walk in the house and be like, y'all need to take the trash out. And they won't do it. And then 2 hours later, they smell what I smell when I hit the door.
Okay.
You know, what I'm saying? Like, I'm part bloodhound is what my husband said. But I can't smell grease. I'm not going to sit here and smell grease all for 3 days because I wanted some fried chicken when I could just drive down the street. And get me some fried chicken, and I just make the side dishes. I'm good with that.
That's true. And also, I think that might be a woman's thing. Honestly, I think because hormones and things, I think sometimes we have a tendency to smell better than men do, because I'd be like, that don't smell right. He looking all crazy. Like, nope. I was like, no, something smelling, something don't smell right up in here. And then later,
that's biology. You know, that's actually evolution, because pregnant, you know, they say your sense of smell gets heightened because when you're pregnant. Well, when you're not pregnant, either way, a woman's sense of smell is heightened because you can sense danger quicker to protect your young. When you get pregnant and your sense of smell increases, it's because that way you can, like, if you're getting ready to eat something, you can kind of smell it before you eat it. And so if it's going to make you sick or something, you can smell it before you eat it so it won't hurt you or the baby. So it's absolutely an evolution kind of thing, like a scientific reasoning for us to have, for women to have heightened sense of smell.
Yeah, like I said, he will smell it eventually. Like, I'll walk in the house, I'll be like, this true. And I'm like, pack it up, and he goes, I don't smell it. I'm like, you will smell it sooner or later. But right now, I do, and it stank.
Right. Something ain't right. And I go in the kitchen sniffing around trying to figure out what it is. Y'all need to put some lemon peels in this garbage disposal and open these windows up.
Sniffing the refrigerator, sniffing the countertop. I'm sniffing everything. Okay, I'm glad we're on the same page. What is your favorite thing to eat that you do make?
Mashed potatoes.
Okay.
I love mashed. I like my mashed potatoes. I boil, like, I don't do potato flakes. I peel potatoes. I boil the potatoes in a chicken broth and water mixture.
Okay.
I use garlic salt. I use, skim milk and, butter and pepper. So, there's like a light garlic taste to them. I love my mashed potatoes. I also like, my tilapia cakes. Mm. And it's kind of like crab cakes, but it's actually, you know, tilapia is cheap. Mm-hmm. So you can make it a lump. Like, you know, the cake is like a salmon cake or salmon croquette or a crab cake, but it's more fish than cake.
Okay.
Because it's a lot cheaper, so you can use more of it. And I don't use breadcrumbs or whatever. I use potatoes with that as well.
Mm.
I use potatoes, I use the tilapia, and I use green red pepper, white onion, garlic, and just kind of, you know, make patties. And then I do them in extra virgin olive oil, like on a skillet, just a quick braise to keep them together.
That right there sounds delicious. I'm about to look that one up because I like me some tilapia. Or tilapia.
I hope it's out there. I made it up, girl. I hope it's out there somewhere.
But like this, it messed with me. I look for a crab cake, salmon cake recipe and can substitute it in, you know, because tilapia would actually, because it's such a white, almost like a clean palate fish, that it'll soak up whatever you do. So that right there is on my list. What is your favorite food that you stash from others? You go, this is mine and nobody else can have it.
Dark chocolate, anything.
Dark chocolate, anything.
Yeah, dark chocolate. They, like, my son, he had a dark chocolate Twix, and he left it in the car. And he texted me. He said, Mom, don't eat my Twix. And I said, LOL, okay. He said, don't. New text. Eat. New text. Bye. New text. Twix. I was like, whatever, son. Because I put it in the freezer. Or my Thin Mints. I put those in the freezer, too. My Thin Mints. It's not a lot of sweets that I eat. I have to be in the mood for it. So my family will eat it, thinking I didn't want it, because it's been in the refrigerator for a week. It's been in the freezer for a week. They think, oh, she didn't want it because it's been in here.
But it don't mean I didn't want it.
Don't eat it just because I didn't eat it yet.
Right.
Don't mean I didn't eat it.
Right. Oh.
I put my name on stuff. I'm trifling. I put my name on it.
In big bold letters.
Like, is your name on this? You knew this wasn't yours because your name ain't on it. So why'd you open it?
Didn't you see this my name is?
Right. All across it.
Yeah, once you get past that point, you're like, you know what, you deserve all the consequences. What, you know, whatever happened from here, you deserved it because you didn't follow the rules.
Right. And I put it right there where you open the box. I got a piece of tape with my name on it. So now you had to break open the tape with my name on it to get your trifling ass into my stuff,
which means you ignored all the warning signs.
Right. You did it on purpose at that point.
Right. See, I'm with you. What is your favorite thing to drink? Non-alcoholic and or alcoholic?
Okay. So my favorite thing to drink that's not alcoholic is soda. Ginger ale and Dr. Pepper. Cause you know, Dr. Pepper is from Texas. So we drank Dr. Pepper here. Dr. Pepper and ginger ale are my two favorite things to drink that are non-alcoholic. My favorite alcoholic beverage is this stuff from Firefly called Apple Pie Moonshine.
Ooh.
It comes in a mason jar and it tastes like apple pie. And this is why I love it. I'll get some green apples and juice them. I would juice the green apples and mix it with the apple pie moonshine.
Word.
And it is so delicious. And when you use fresh juice in your cocktails, it helps with the, it doesn't make you as dehydrated and it helps with hangovers and stuff.
And when you say juice, you mean you like blend it together?
No, I use a juicer.
Okay.
And I put the green apples in the juicer. And then I mix the juice with apple pie moonshine.
Okay. Okay.
It's delicious. It tastes like an apple pie.
I bet you it does.
It does. And it comes in a little mason jar. It's so country and cute. It comes in a mason jar.
Ooh. Ooh, yeah, because they have moonshine here. It's a particular moonshine with, like, cherries. And we do, like, Coke. And we, like, take the cherry moonshine and pour it across. So, like, they get the cherries at the bottom. Especially when you get to the bottom. Because, you know, they're soaked up by that juice and put it across. When I tell you that thing is awesome, it is out of this world.
I might have to try that now.
I like to do that. Yeah, like I said, I have a big sweet tooth, so I like to do that. And something else I like to do, I found this red hot cinnamon whiskey.
Oh my.
And I mix that with some apple juice and put it on with some ice. Honey, when I tell you that was awesome. Next time I'm going to heat it up, because some people say it tastes like a cider, so because it's getting winter time.
Oh, that sounds real autumnal. Yeah, it sounds like a fall. Yes.
So it's getting ready to get cold. So next time I do it, I'm going to do it warm. But this time I did it cold over some ice. And that's what I was drinking when I was watching the Beyonce concert. Yes.
Another thing I like is the, if you take the salted caramel Stoli vodka and cran apple juice.
Mm.
It tastes like a caramel apple. It's so good.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yes, salted caramel Stoli vodka.
Oh, that sounds. Yeah. Like I said, I have a sweet tooth, so that's right up my alley.
Yes, it's delicious.
What is the worst thing that you ever ate or cooked?
The worst thing that I can say that I've ever eaten, octopus.
Okay.
Which is why I will never eat it again.
It probably tastes rubbery, didn't it?
Yeah, the texture is what got me. Yeah. Cause again, hypersensitive.
Yeah.
Texture. Yeah. Not happening.
Yeah. And the thing about octopus and squid is that it has to be cooked just right. Like honestly.
You gotta eat it hot.
Huh?
And you gotta get it hot. Once it cool off, it's back to that judgy, rubbery,
texture to it. Yeah. Like I said, for me, I could eat it hot or cold, but it's one of those things where if it's not cut right or prepared right, you might as well be eating the rubber off your thighs.
Ooh.
I mean, because it's just so rubbery and chewy. And so a lot of people eat it for the first time and they're like, oh, it's nasty. I was like, it didn't taste rubbery. Everybody goes, yeah, like, yeah, that's because it wasn't prepared correctly. But for some people, like you said, for some people, it's just not their thing. Like for you in particular, but for me, love eating on sushi. Because especially like you say, you're hypersensitive. You probably all the texture, the fishes, and and all that.
I have tried sushi and I have eaten sushi, but then like I've seen all these stories, like I've seen the videos on Facebook about like the salmon and they have like the worms on it. In the salmon, like crawl, and I'm not now, but like I went for sushi once, and my homegirl, she's so colored. She is the only, she can find fried chicken no matter where we go. This heifer found fried chicken sushi on the menu. I had some of hers because I got real sushi, but it was delicious.
I bet you like, it was. I
like the cooked food, you know, the cooked sushi, like the cooked Japanese cuisine. Cook Chinese food, but if it ain't cooked, if the only thing cooked is the rice, miss me. I'm not doing it. It is textures. It's not, you know, it's not anything made. Like my stepson, he's 16. We took him on a double date with his girlfriend for his birthday, and he loves sushi, so that's where we went. And they had sushi, and I smooth had rosemary chicken. I'm not doing it.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But like I said, I love it. I know for a lot of people, I tell them do vegetable. You can do chicken. I like a lot of the chicken sushi is excellent because you know they have to cook the chicken, the shrimp. Mm-hmm. The shrimp, you can tell them to cook that too. And a lot of times do tempura, which a lot of times means it's fried. I do that. And also, is this place here called Cowfish, and their sushi is like, I guess, non-traditional sushi. So some of the rolls are not fish. So you get barbecue sushi, like so it's made out of pulled pork. You get hamburger sushi. Where it's like they cooked a hamburger, and it looked like a little mini hamburger. And so I tell people, that's one way to do it without actually eating the raw fish. Remember the first time we went there, we fell in love with it, because you could get like sushi presented in all these different ways that was not fish.
Right.
So.
Right.
And so.
The sushi is the way it's plated, it's presented and prepared. It's not what's in it.
Right.
Sushi is the roll, the rice roll, and like when they roll it up and slice it, and it's all that. It's not, sushi doesn't mean raw fish.
No. No. But like this, you want raw fish, you're talking about sashimi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're talking about like just a smack or here's some fish, that's sashimi. But like, yeah, but like the actual rolls, yeah. So, I don't know if they have one in, you know, they have one here and they have one in Raleigh. And we, most of the time we take people there and they normally do one of those non-traditional sushis. And it's actually excellent.
I'm gonna Google it. You know, I am.
It's actually really, really good. Goody. I want you to know I have had a wonderful time with you. This has been a fun ride. Honey, we've talked about sex with food. We've talked about orgies. We talked about, G-spots. You know, we kind of been all around the world. So, for a lot of people, this is probably very educational. I hope they enjoyed all your knowledge and wisdom. And so tell people where they can reach you at if they want to get in contact with you after they hear this.
I am Ask Goody on all social media platforms. Just because I believe in universality of contact, like I don't want you to have to remember a different one for everything. Right. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the website, by the website is askgoody.com. And that's like a sex positive space. So I do like sex toy reviews and, frequently asked questions that I get as a sex expert, sex in the news, things of that nature. And then any sex toys, my toy store is getgoodiesgoodies.com.
Okay.
So, anybody want to buy anything? Or if you have a question, hit me up at askgoody@gmail.com. Or if, you know, but the toy store is getgoodiesgoodies.com. That's GETGOODYSGOODIES.
Okay.
.com.
Oh, I thank you. This has been a fun ride. And so I want to tell everybody out there, thank you for listening to another episode. And y'all reach out to her, hit her up on all these social medias and say, hey, I heard you on the show. Like, they're really, our audience is really, really good about that. So they'll be hitting you up and showing you love as soon as it gets out. And I want to tell you, thank you, Goody.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. And I say this to everybody, but girl, like I said, we've talked before. You know that I love you and I thank you for just taking the time to do this, out of your busy schedule. Cause you have all kinds of things you're doing. And for those of you out there in the Black Guy Who Tips Premium Land, I thank you, and we'll be back for another episode of Lip Smacking Good. Bye, guys.